So the water keeper, so there was Hudson River Keeper, I believe,
'90s?
Well, Pete Seeger was involved with Clearwater, which is not a direct precursor.
Robert Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Robert Kennedy Jr. is the one I associate with.
Yes, and so the Pete Seeger's organization was not a direct precursor to Waterkeeper, but was in the same movement from which Waterkeeper came about.
The thing about, probably the biggest thing they do in the states, like the mid-states, has to do with hog farms.
Yeah.
And ponds for waste.
And on the whole Chesapeake system especially.
Oh, yeah.
Hog farms, and there's stuff with chicken farms as well. I've chatted with a lot of those folks, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because, salmon farms are just industrial feedlots at sea, and so there's different issues on how to track their waste.
We had the same issue at one point. We were involved in a lot of this salmon farm thing, but it sort of got taken care of by the Endangered Species Act. And what about Canada with something like that?
How do you mean about risk to endangered species?
Well, that all of a sudden all these things were no longer acceptable because the Atlantic salmon had been declared an endangered species officially.
No, we have salmon farms in areas where wild salmon are endangered, but it's
not a question of a specific species that they
No, they use St. John River strain, which is not, I'm pretty sure, not listed per se, but even if they used, even
lower,
if
the, what they call the lower Bay of Fundy salmon is endangered.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean all of Bay of Fundy salmon are sort of in the process, if not listed,
right.
I believe.
Yeah.
And so no, that hasn't been.
That was a major weapon in terms.
Yeah.
Of
now the impacts on wild salmon are the center of the discussion around salmon farms in Canada on the West Coast. But certainly on the East Coast too, there's demonstrated interbreeding, which weakens the wild strains and very depressed populations. There is a potential for transfer of parasites and disease. There's those are all issues, but we have, our salmon farms are there. When a salmon farm is moved because of bad sighting, they're given another site. So, and we've, in Canada in the last few years, we've had farms approved in Nova Scotia for 1 million fish per site, like huge, twice the size of,
the South Shore, Shelburne County, places like that.
Yeah, St. Mary's Bay.
Yeah.
And Jordan Bay.
Yeah.
Which is just the other side of Shelburne Harbor.
Yeah.
And then there have been some fought off on the Eastern Shore, but they were a Scottish company, not Cook's.
Yeah.
But the administrative, the questions around how Waterkeeper works are really good ones. Waterkeeper, it's not, the Alliance is a hub. It's not a service organization that serves the members in a sense. That's fair, and it's important to say that becoming a Waterkeeper doesn't mean you have money flowing from New York here. So they have great attorneys, they have great expertise, and I'm sure, a lot of Waterkeepers work with Waterkeeper Alliance staff on issues that overlap with the sort of national campaigns Waterkeeper Alliance is running. They run a great conference, and they sort of, they ensure the quality of Waterkeepers around the world and help make sure that it's a strong network because it's full of members who are strong.
You mentioned once the why they needed to trademark the name.
Well, they needed to trademark the name, and there have been periods where Waterkeeper is very aggressive about defending the trademark, and anyone who's not listed, registered with them and accepted with them as a water keeper, they very aggressively go after them sometimes, because we've had coal companies set up a river keeper, right? Because the name has power. So then you set up, I love the term astroturf for fake grassroots organizations, right? So I wish we didn't need it, but it's a good term. And so they very aggressively defend so that if you're a water keeper, it means something, right? And there are stream keepers and fantastic grassroots organizations, and there's the Skudik River Keepers out of Spiak, Pleasant Point, Maine, the Passamaquoddy group. I've made it very clear that you know, we are not going to challenge their use of the word riverkeeper, because they're you know, they chose that name because they are the key. It's their river. They're the keepers of that river, and they want to be that. And so there's instances where people are using the term, but it's if you're a coal company, you'll be gone after, and otherwise they'll just sort of conveniently not notice. But to like to set up a Penobscot Baykeeper, you'd need to be a member.
So is this like all over the world?
Yeah, it started in the U.S. and it moved to Canada fairly quickly. Now it's definitely centered in Canada and the U.S. U.S. mostly. There's only 9 in Canada, but there's
Europe, maybe?
Yeah, there's a few in Europe. We've got one guy in Russia who raps well at conferences. He's really, really funny. He tries to get his translator to translate his rap songs at the event after the last night. But and then we've got one or two in Poland. We've got one in London, canal keeper, working really interesting because working on water that's been channelized, that's been canals for hundreds of years, and looking at the ecosystem in the city of London, which is so interesting, I find. And then, but just a few in Europe, several in Australia, several in China, several in India now, and a lot, there have been a lot, the last couple years, there have been groups of monks choosing to take on the model in the Himalayas, which is really interesting.
Do you ever send your river keepers from maybe Canada, do you send them to other countries?
We have a conference where we all gather, and the Water Keeper Alliance. So if you were a water keeper starting up in, you know, in Nepal, you'd probably have a lot more support from the Water Keeper Alliance than you're going to get here, just because, you know, frankly, you're not going to need it as much here because it's of the context we're in, and that you'd have support from your peers and that sort of thing. And so they put a lot of energy into that. Sometimes there's individuals from different organizations. Like, I've become really close to the a water keeper in Senegal because I speak French. And so, but we haven't done visits, but we could at some time. But that's sort of ad hoc. But there is Water Keepers Alliance staff who support the international. And then there's lots in Latin America now, too. So it is global, still very much centered in the U.S. And it's like you go to conferences and it's like half of the sessions deal with the Clean Water Act and stuff that doesn't apply in Canada, right? So there's still, if you're not a U.S. keeper, then, you know, it's not as applicable to you, but it still is a meaningful movement to be a part of. And so the alliance is there and growing the movement and organizing a really good conference and serving as a hub. You can they've got communications tools, online communications tools to help waterkeepers stay connected and share resources and that sort of thing. So it's good. It's like the first thing when we were looking at oil spill response in the Bay of Fundy, and the plans to use dispersants, the first thing I did was called the waterkeepers on the Gulf of Mexico, right? Because I don't need to track down the experts who have expertise in that because they've been working on it. So there's the alliance, but the peer-to-peer work I've found just as useful or more useful, meeting people at conferences and then calling them up. So having a relationship with Casco Baykeeper and seeing what they're doing around coastal acidification, for instance, is way more useful than the high-level staff in Manhattan. That's nothing against them, but it's that peer-to-peer networking is incredibly, and it's meant that I've been working with groups on the West Coast on salmon farms, so we've been able to, through Waterkeeper Alliance, I think we've helped sort of bridge the salmon farming issue in Canada anyway.
I mean Atlantic and Pacific?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it's a lot of the same issues. Different, there's key differences, but, you know, it's the same fundamental issues. So I'd say that's the strength of it a lot, is that networking, but it's not like an organization. It's not a foundation that is funding or supporting the grassroots organizations. It's it's an alliance which serves as a network, but it's also kind of its own NGO, and it works on campaigns nationally and has its own attorneys.